Well, I think for a start, unconventional gas is gas, and gas displacing coal and oil in some cases at a stroke reduces CO2 emissions by up to 50%. And so unconventional gas is just one aspect of that, and it's readily available in many parts of the world, including here in Australia. So there are issues about how you recover it, concerns about the horizontal well drilling process, the fracturing process, and the general well management of that that have been expressed. They're all reasonable concerns, but this is a technology that's been well developed in other areas of the oil and gas industry for over 50 years now or more, and these risks can be managed. And so the technical aspects of seismic incidents, of the leakage to aquifers, these will not happen if the process is designed and operated and properly regulated with robust regulation and inspection. The key thing is that it has to be demonstrated so that monitoring of the process is made transparent and the evidence produced to the various key stakeholders, which will be government, the industry, particularly the local communities, that both before the process, during, and even after the abandonment of these wells, that the data is made available to show that the concerns about health and environment and the quality of life are not impeded, and that these bring wealth and prosperity to local communities by either direct means of employment and or by indirect means, governments and the companies involved bringing infrastructure and help to those communities.
It's becoming a pressing problem in the UK, isn't it, because your gas supplies are diminishing. But there is what sounds like massive opposition in the UK, as there is in parts of Australia. Do you think it will proceed? You've got a ban in Scotland.
Yes, there's a moratorium in Scotland. I think the government in the UK is very determined to replace the declining North Sea gas reserves with indigenous shale gas in the UK that will give us security of supply rather than the current imports that we get either from Norway or a lot of LNG, which is very CO2 intensive and so not as good for climate change, coming in from Qatar. There's a lot of work to do in terms of this local engagement, of the assurance that people need that the benefits, both in terms of prosperity and the re-energising of areas that were very prosperous because of mining in the middle of the last century that have been decimated, and this is an opportunity for a lot of those regions to be reinvigorated. But the assurance that I've spoken about, that this is safe, that it can be done much more safely than coal mining was 50 years ago, and that the benefits by far outweigh the short-term disadvantages, which need to be listened to and taken into account.
Professor Mark Zobek, you were approached by your President Obama to say, can it be done? And can it be done safely for the public, for human health and for the environment? And your answer was the same, wasn't it?
Very much so. The committee I served on as part of the Department of Energy looked at a wide range of issues, talked to many stakeholders, engaged with industry, with environmental groups, with the public, and we concluded there was simply no question that shale gas could be developed in an environmentally responsible manner. We understand the issues, but we have to be organized properly. We have to deal with the stakeholders in a responsible and conscientious way, but there's no impediment to doing it right.
But the images coming out of the U.S. in films like Gasland would serve to engage populations right around the country. We were hearing in South Africa that was those images are a problem. So the experience maybe doesn't match up with your confidence.
Well, I'd rather not comment on a lot of the exaggerations in movies like Gasland, the misrepresentation of burning faucets and as being associated with hydraulic fracturing, when it was clearly demonstrated that it was not years prior to the filming. The issue is to have a fact-based regulatory system, a transparent operating environment, and to make the affected people part of the process from the very beginning.
You say continuous improvement is important because there's a lot of development in the science around this, but how do you keep companies transparent?
Transparency doesn't come naturally to a lot of companies, but if it's a requirement for moving forward, they'll be transparent. The issues affecting, say, water quality and local contamination are always related to well construction. and we know how to construct wells properly, that doesn't mean that they're always constructed properly. You need adequate standards, and you need adequate inspection, and you need enforcement of regulations to make sure wells are constructed with multiple barriers to prevent problems. Coincidentally, while I was serving on the DOE committee looking at shale gas development and environmental protection, I was serving on a National Academy committee looking at the Macondo well, the Deepwater Horizon accident, and not surprisingly, a lot of the issues were very, very similar. It was well construction, well construction, well construction. Now, the other issue that concerns people a lot is water. And so one of our recommendations for transparency was full manifesting of water supplies. Where does the water come from that you're using? How do you use it? And after you use it, what is its chemical composition? And what have you done with it? Just account for, you know, every liter of water that's used, both in a volumetric and a chemical sense, and put that on publicly available websites. And if people are suspicious about what's going in the wells or what's coming out of the wells, well, there's the data. Daylight is a great antiseptic, and we thought better data collection and putting the data out there for everyone to use was the best possible thing, both for the public and for the industry.
Barry Goldstein, you're the Director of State Development in South Australia, and I was amazed to hear you stand up there and say, no development any time. Was it?
Well, no, basically our legislation puts a ban on everything everywhere until such time as we've looked at things locally. Our legislation requires protection of social, natural, and economic environments. Our legislated framework requires me to go to the health department, because I'm not a health expert, requires me to go to the experts in cultural heritage and native title, requires me to go to occupational health and safety experts, experts in biodiversity, etc. And we, in that co-regulatory sphere, mutually reach decisions as to whether or not the risks are all enumerated and the risk mitigation strategies offered are sound, but that's not enough. We then put it to the public court. We actually require engagement with local communities. We define a landowner in our legislation as any potentially affected person, organization, or enterprise, which basically means everybody under the sun. We exclude no one.
You're quite happy to shame companies, aren't you?
Yeah, and we're quite happy to shame people who aren't being held beholden to the truth.
Or and dumb operators, as you described.
Or NGOs who may be actually saying things which have no credibility.
Have you done that?
Indeed. And
what's an example of that?
Well, an example would be that we've published our fact sheets. And that's downloadable from our webs, that we have nearly 800 wells fracture stimulated in the Cooper-Aramanga Basin with no evidence whatsoever of damage to water.
But could you say the same in the U.S.? 60,000 wells, I think.
2 million.
2 million, right. Was it? 2 million.
Well, there's well over 100,000 wells and on the order of 2 million hydraulic fracturing jobs. Mm-hmm. And both the president and the former administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency are on record as saying there is no contamination that is directly related to hydraulic fracturing. Now, there is contamination. The sources of contamination are investigated. It always comes back to poor well construction.
A poorly constructed
well will leak whether or not you hydraulically fracture it or not.
Well, does it matter, though, where it's coming from? There are examples of contamination.
Well, it is true that the term hydraulic fracturing has come to represent the entire process of drilling and stimulating production from these unconventional reservoirs. And so it gets singled out for concern. There are many reasons for concern, and it's a large-scale industrial process, and it needs to be properly done, properly regulated, and the regulations need to be enforced.
Alan Hawke, you've been doing a number of inquiries over time, but your latest one was on fracking in the Northern Territory, and your recommendation was it can proceed in the Northern Territory, and the government, I think, is doing quite a lot of work to prepare for that. But you have despair about politicians who put bans in place. Why is that?
Well, I think the South Australian and the Queensland premiers get it. The Chief Minister of the Northern Territory gets it. And they're from different political persuasions.
But South Australia has a ban.
No, South Australia does not have a ban.
A moratorium, yes?
No. That's the opposition. This is the easy way out for oppositions. They just all say, let's have a moratorium. Well, what's the moratorium for? It's so they can work out whether it's okay to go ahead or not. But they never say that. And when they have proof that it is okay to go ahead, they don't want to know about it. It's political cowardice. in my view.
And there is quite a risk, isn't there? Because Alan Wood was saying that that demonstration last weekend in Melbourne could put enough pressure on for the Victorian government to put to extend its moratorium.
Well, it may well. Victoria has had a moratorium for a long while. The change of government, when they were in opposition, they were opposed to it too. But what, since that report on fracking, I've provided another report to the Northern Territory about the regime that they might adopt going forward for regulation. And that draws very heavily on what Barry and the South Australians have done. And what we're trying to do is to match or better that leading practice in the Northern Territory, and as Barry has also said, have it amenable to continuous improvement as further evidence comes to light and further best practice comes to light.